This podcast is rated S for science and also for spoilers and swearing. There's going to be swearing.
Something is killing these people and sucking them dry.
Run! It's a stampede!
It's depressed.
This beast can feel such things.
Rancor are emotionally complex creatures. They're quite peaceful and less threatened.
Welcome, everybody, to Cinematica Animalia, your weekly foray into the biology of movie monsters. Today, we are circling back to the Book of Boba Fett to have a more in-depth look at the Rancor. We'll go over some news first, tell you a bit about this series, our thoughts, and then get stuck into the science that the show brings up, talking about potential Rancor lifestyles and life histories, and answering the ultimate question, does the Rancor have nipples? And then Libby is going to take us through what makes a spin-off a spin-off. As always, this show's broken up into a few different segments. We'll have Time Goes Below, so whatever piques your interest, by all means, go ahead. Okay, but before we get into that, my name's Sam Perrin. I'm a freshwater ecologist and climate data analyst based in Trondheim, Norway. I also run the website Ecology for the Masses alongside... Adam and I had a comment on the website that had obviously been Google translated really badly into English, and we were referred to as Ecology for the Heaps. I also run the website Ecology for the Masses alongside co-host Adam Harsick, a disease ecologist at the Alongside Adam is the Baroness, Her Ladyship Libby Young, our story specialist and writer at Short Story Soup. And last but not least, we're joined by Dave, a vet and our movie physiologist. Yeah, so I came across a really cool story this week whereby there is one family living in South Africa, the Tompkins family, who purchased 11 farms totaling 27,000 hectares over 5 years and turned it all into a big, massive rewilding scheme, right? And they've seen a really diverse group of species come back into this area now, including lions and cheetahs, to the point where their lions and cheetahs are at population levels where they're able to translocate these species to other parts of Africa.
Cool.
So it's a testament. I mean, obviously, you know, it's not something that everybody can do. It's not what I'd call everyday conservation work, purchasing, you know, 27,000 hectares. But I just think it's really a testament to... You know, rich people can make a difference if they put their minds to it and do some research. It's just absolutely nice to see a wealthy family not being dicks for once.
Not using their money to shoot those animals and put them as trophies. Yeah.
Yeah. This reminds me a lot of our favorite vegan Irish metalhead, the 21st Baron of Dunsinane, Randall Plunkett, who rewilded his 750 acre estate.
All right, this season on The Mandalorian... excuse me, that was weird. Let me try again. This season, The Mandalorian... Damn it! Why does that keep happening? In the Book of Boba Fett, there we go. Boba Fett teams up with The Mandalorian, god damn it, as the creators either don't think it can stand on its own, so they rely on the success of its predecessor, or likely they just don't have enough material... Either way, our bounty hunter turned benefactor uses his incessant and fairly irrelevant flashbacks to the past, a teen mod squad, aka the Vespa Vandals, aka Power Rangers, a Wookiee with PTSD, some Rancor riding lessons from Danny Trejo, to defeat Baron Harkonnen's minions to overrun Arrakis, or as the locals call it, Tatooine, to prevent the criminal spice trade for a very Disney ending.
What did we like about this?
You know,
let's remember that we try to be as positive as possible for this section.
You know, I appreciate Star Wars even before a recent rewatch and newfound appreciation for the prequels. I always more or less liked the prequels, if not loved them. Mm-hmm. This, I like the world of Star Wars, and there's so much to it, which they brought some of to this. It's fun seeing the Darksaber lore expanded. I like seeing Cad Bane in live action. It's fun seeing more Wookiees that actually are cool to look at and not just a weird-looking tall, skinny guy.
Cad Bane was big, googly, red-eye man, right?
Correct.
Yep.
Yeah.
And there's some fun scenes.
I thought the Rancor looked amazing. That was some seriously fantastic CGI. I thought that looked really cool.
I'll agree with that.
I really liked Luke Skywalker emotionally blackmailing a child. I felt like Luke isn't done wrestling with his dark side, and this is some material I want to see. No. Genuinely, I liked, not love, but I liked Cobb Vanth and Cad Bane. This was the only part of Boba Fett that felt like Star Wars to me, like a space western at its roots. And though I dearly love Timothy Oliphant, I do feel bad that he can't seem to escape his Deadwood role. Just forever a western guy, I guess.
I still like the Wookiee whose name I can't pronounce.
Chrysanthemum.
Chrysanthemum. Croissant.
I was saying
Chrysanthemum.
I hope you got to the scene of Boba Fett in the back to tank, which we're all tired of, when the Wookiee drags him out of the back to tank and just starts beating the all living hell out of him. Still one
that
of my favorite
shows. That was very entertaining. Yeah.
I was telling Adam, I felt like this was the first time I was ever genuinely scared of a Wookiee. Like, I feel like they did a really good job making him a scary motherfucker.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, what's that line like...
Let the Wookiee win.
Yeah.
Yeah, let the Wookiee win. Yeah. But you never get that sense with Chewbacca. Like, never.
No.
At all. And so this was like...
You let the droid win. Well, the droid won't rip your arms off if you lose.
That's the one I was looking for, yeah. But this, I mean, yeah, they really do give the impression of this is a massive, snarling, 9-foot dude who will mess you the fuck up.
Yeah.
He's just taking blaster shot after blaster shot in that final shootout scene. And then, like, he gets behind, like, the barrier, and I'm like, he doesn't even look that bad.
Yeah. And let's just start on what we don't like. I don't like the fact that no one here, even Boba Fett, gets any sort of real character development at all.
Yeah.
Like, you don't feel, even the pigmen. I like the idea of having a pigmen. Like, I thought.
Not the Gamorreans.
Like, I love them.
I thought that we're going to have this, like, kind of buddy cop duo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, from
the relic,
from the relic, like these funny, like buddy. I thought they were going to get some personality, but nothing. Boba Fett is so fucking boring.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's just you have a literal faceless, emotionless person who has more personality than Boba Fett. It. I mean, granted, The Mandalorian had 2 seasons of character development beforehand, but.
He had more in the first season.
The quippy character, Amy Sedaris, whoever was writing her this season made her intolerable.
Yes, I completely agree with that. I didn't mind her in The Mandalorian. Like, I thought there were parts where she was great. In this season, I fucking could not stand her.
When she spoke Jawa, that alone was funnier than anything she said. Like, just do that. That is hilarious, having a human speaking Jawa. That's great. Yeah. And it's just so sanitized, Disney. Like, you know exactly what's going to happen here.
Too many things that just don't go anywhere. It's never... Sorry if there's a lot of noise going on. The cats decided to attack the box my computer is sitting on. Ashes, are you having a good time? Oh my god, are you finished? I hope that's not coming through, because it's insane. I feel like it's never a good sign in a show when the most entertaining part of it is watching your main character get the shit kicked out of him for a few minutes.
Did anybody... Sorry to cut Libby and Dave off, but did anybody at any point find Boba Fett threatening or in any way scary or even capable of this?
Not at all.
Nope.
Hammering home the meme of Boba Fett kind of just being a shit bounty hunter, despite him being, quote, the scariest dude ever in the original trilogy. But the only time you ever see him on screen, and this is only cementing it, he's a bumbling fuck. Like, there's nothing to him.
No, I was going to just say that when he's trying to give the speech at the end, and he's like, oh, you need to leave my planet or else. And he's like, what the fuck have you done this entire season to make us worry about what is or else?
Yeah.
He wrote a rancor. That was it.
Yeah, how are these your people? You've been here for, like, what, a long weekend or something like that? I just, yeah.
Yeah, I felt like the entire series was an awkward, bumbling mess that didn't know what its own plot was, much less what genre it should be in. Like, you had straight spaghetti western, you had Edwardian steampunk, you had urban sci-fi, you had Godzilla versus Kaiju. Like, it was like a bad buffet, you know, the kind you get food poisoning from. Also, if you're gonna cast Matt Berry, fucking use him.
Oh my god.
Why would you give him A, no lines, and B, just completely dull, deliverable lines from any, you know, Tom, Dick, or Jane? Like, it was awful.
Yeah.
I also felt like the scooter scene was the worst vehicle chase I've ever seen, and I've seen all of the Fast and Furious movies.
It was space really Vespas. Space Vespas. Like,
nothing more intimidating than a Vespa.
Also, much like the Eagles of Middle Earth, no one will ever definitively know why Finnick, aka Finnick the Fox, Finnick Foxy Shand, didn't just murder everyone to begin with, much less dragging it out into a fucking war. Because you have her be this scary, crazy ninja assassin and just kill all the bad guys and all the heads of the criminal families in, like, I don't know, 10 seconds flat? Is there a reason we didn't try that earlier?
He's a bounty hunter. You cannot tell us that all of a sudden he's developed compunction about murdering.
Right?
These were bad people. These were crime lords.
Well, earlier he just murders a whole biker gang from his ship. Yeah. Like, he clearly doesn't. He picks and chooses when he wants to be honorable.
He's a dude who is known for incinerating people in the original trilogies. What the fuck happened?
Yeah.
He's like a little Disney princess. He just loves animals and doesn't want to kill anyone.
I think all this guy did, this is a really good example of someone making up a resume and showing up to the job interview and trying to bullshit their way through it. And it becomes very quickly apparent that you have no idea what you're doing. He's never killed anybody. He's never had to use that jetpack. And when he did, he fell straight into the Sarlacc. He doesn't know how to wear armor because he takes his helmet off before every fight.
He's got a good PR team, I assume.
He's got a Fennec Shand, and that's all he's got going for him.
I agree with everything you guys said. And then on top of it, because it just bothered me throughout the entire season, I hate that fucking spear thing that he just drags around everywhere. I don't know who thought that thing was going to look cool. The thing he makes with the Tuscans, it looks like it has a dandelion with a point attached to the one end.
Where did he pull it from at the end, though? That's what I want to know.
I thought that he was going to murder the head of the Pikes with that as like a kind of symbolic gesture of, hey, this thing that symbolizes my time with the Tuscans, I'm going to use this to, you know, murder you. But he kills... He kills Cad Bane with it, which is not, you know, there wasn't much of a link there. And I don't know. Yeah, I thought that could have been an interesting story if they'd gone with that. But
you know what I keep thinking about, though, is the scene where he has the nose lizard, you know, crawl into his brain and he goes on this desert drug trip. I just pictured that entire time him, like, stumbling around, finding a tree and, like, drunkenly fighting it. And, like, breaking off one of its branches and then coming back.
Many of these trees were my friends. Creatures I had known from Nut and Acorn. There is no curse in Elvish, Entish, or the tongues of men for this treachery.
Okay, so for trivia this week, it's relevant, but it's been relevant before, but I feel the need to shout this. Ming-Na Wen is 57.
I thought she was 52. Goddamn.
No, she's 57. How is that legal?
That's why I called her Fennec the Fox.
it's incredible.
I assume she was in her 30s. What the fuck?
Yeah,
it's really lovely that she let them borrow her back to tank to use in the show, because most of the time it's just her sleeping in it at home to sort of stave off the ages. And it was nice that she's like, you can borrow it for a couple of days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually heard an unconfirmed rumor that she, much like Elizabeth Bathory, just bathes in the blood of the young, and that's just how she stays, you know, forever youthful and vibrant in appearance.
I think it's all the droid parts in her keeps her young.
Yeah. And so we've, this has been discussed in Done to Death Online, but in case people didn't know, Luke Skywalker here is obviously completely CGI, and the voice is not Mark Hamill's this time around. It is what's CGI but for voices? An AI-generated voice. Yeah. which is, it does sound a bit woody and hollow at some points, but that's scary. Like, that's concerning.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I don't like this anymore. I remember when Marvel were coming along and doing all the CGI de-agings. I was like, you know what? This is getting pretty good. This is cool. And now all of a sudden we have
deepfakes. Yeah.
CGI Luke Skywalker, deepfake Luke Skywalker with an AI voice. I'm like, I don't like this. I don't like this anymore. Somebody set Hollywood back 20 years.
Yeah, I'm sure all the actors don't like it either because they're like, fuck. The one industry we didn't think would be replaced by robots.
Yeah. This is what they did, that some Russian movie studio is doing for Bruce Willis right now. They just use an AI to generate. I mean, it's the same as him acting in a movie anyway.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it's just incredible. They can just be like, hey, here's $5 million. You can just come in. You can just talk into this microphone. We send to your house for like a minute. And then it hits all the cues. We can just make this movie and paste your face onto something.
So the female Tuscan warrior, which I really appreciate it, is played by an actor called Joanna Bennett. And you may not recognize her name, but she has stunt doubled and motion captured for nearly all the female leads in the Marvel movies, as well as Wonder Woman. So you have definitely seen her.
That's badass.
Yeah, that was really cool. Honestly, the least favorite part of the series to me were the scooter gang, the mod squad. But what I did not know is there's a reason that they look so dumb. The mods were a youth subculture in 1960s Britain that styled themselves immaculately in crisp, sugar-water-dipped hair, three-piece Edwardian-style suits, and clean and colorful scooters. So that was definitely pulled from bits of history, and which is probably why it didn't fucking work.
I would have much rather seen another like youth group movement around that time in Britain. Was the punks, the rude boys, and the skinheads, the pre-Nazi skinheads. And seeing those guys as a gang would have been incredible.
Yeah, but then you can't have be like mods, because they're like real mods, but it also stands for modification, Adam. It's very clever.
It's witty.
Oh. Yeah. For all those parts.
Yeah, you get it now. You get it. Yeah.
I had my brain removed and they put a rock in.
Yeah, I just was impressed by the sugar water. So they would melt sugar into water, like hot water, and that's what they would like comb their giant pompadours with. So like I was reading an interview with an elderly person that used to be in that culture, and they were saying the harder their hair, like the better. So they just had this like helmet cased sugar watered hair. So it wouldn't move when they were driving around on their little colorful Vespas.
We just washed the hair. Yeah. You know, I work on my hair a long time, and you hit it. He hits my hair.
Right, so before we start looking at the science today, if you've got any thoughts or questions, you can find Adam and I on Twitter. I'm at BigDrFishboy. Adam is at HarsikAdam. If you want to get in touch with the podcast, you can visit the website cinematicaanimalia.com or email us at cinematica.animalia@gmail.com. If you want to read Libby's work, you can visit shortstorysoup.substack.com, and there you will find a veritable bounty of stories of the short persuasion. And if you want to hear about some of the less movie-related ecology that Adam, myself, and a large team of international writers write about, you can check out ecologyforthemasses.com. And as always, if you're listening and you enjoy the podcast, leave an in-app rating. It really helps. And by all means, leave a suggestion for a monster you'd like to see covered in the future as well. We're always looking for suggestions from the fans.
I was going to say, and while this season of The Book of Boba Fett might not be 5 stars, we sure like to be, so please give us stars on our podcast platforms.
Yeah. So, in Star Wars media, whenever we've seen a Rancor, it's always been on Tatooine, right? I've never watched Attack of the Clones or anything like that. I've never watched The Clone Wars or any of the animated canon media. But to the best of my knowledge, when we've seen the Rancors, they've been on Tatooine, but they're not native to Tatooine, right?
They're not. I'm sorry. Ugh. No, the Rancors are not native to Tatooine. They're native to a planet called Dathomir, which my main exposure to that is the recent Star Wars game, Jedi Fallen Order, from 2018. Mm-hmm. And at least the part of that planet that you go to is a windswept desert, barren, horrendous wasteland. And it is a pretty dark side infested planet, at least from most of the exposure I've had from Star Wars media. That is where the Night Sisters are from, which are a group of Force users that use the quote magic with a K, because it's different, which is basically a different kind of Force. And that is also where the Night Brothers are, and that Darth Maul is a Night Brother, and his brother, Garth Maul, that you see in the Clone Wars series.
Was that not a joke? Is his brother's name actually Garth Maul?
His name is not Garth Maul. It is Savage.
That's much better. Are you sure that's not Darth Maul's drag persona?
Savage Maul. Just deadfalling with his no legs. Such a good deadfall. Just two pieces just go side by side.
Now, in the game, do you see Rancor on that planet?
You don't see Rancor, but you see species that are, I can't remember what they're called, but they look like bipedal crocodiles that are about half the size of a Rancor, so it is not a nice place to be.
Okay. We had bipedal crocodiles on Earth.
Oh.
Previously.
Wow.
Well, relatives of the crocodile. Yeah. Almost. I think there are actually a couple of species of crocodile that kind of walked on, that developed hooves as well.
I hate it.
I've read on the Wikipedia, the Star Wars Wikipedia, for all those who weren't already in the know, that there are several different species of Rancor. So Rancor seems to be maybe an order or a family of different species.
They might be breeds as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if they've been domesticated, then they could breed for certain things for sure, which might be why this thing's gotten so big. I mean, because it's just been bred for size. It doesn't look like a healthy individual. And I don't think it would do particularly well in a desert because there's not going to be a lot of food around there. And if this thing is a carnivore, it's going to be really hard to find enough prey on a constant basis to maintain that enormous size. So I think that something like this would potentially come from a jungle. And Adam, you had some thoughts on how it would attack prey?
I think that this is going to be somewhat similar. Because, I mean, when I look at a Rancor, especially this season, it reminds me of a crocodile-gorilla-bear hybrid, where it seems to have some reptilian traits with its, you know, thickish, kind of quasi-scale-like hide, but that might also just be like a hippo, or a rhino, which are mammals. But it has these nostrils that are kind of above its head, above its eyes, rather. And I think Dave's going to touch on that a bit later. But the ancestors of our modern-day whales were these wolf-like creatures that who had nostrils on the end of a muzzle, that over evolutionary time kind of moved further and further up their skull until it eventually ended up on their back as a, you know, blowhole. But I think that this Rancor can use its kind of, not superior in an anatomical sense, so above nostrils to hide in the water and remain motionless while being able to breathe until a smaller prey item comes by, at which point they can jump out, reach with those long arms, those big grabby fingers to grab onto roughly human-sized organism to bite a piece off and swallow whole, because that thing has like 5 teeth total, which could not be used for anything beyond maybe helping it hold and tear something. It has to swallow its prey whole. There's just no other way. So this thing taking down bigger things and chewing at it makes no sense. It has to be eating smaller items.
Yeah. But I mean, it could be like what crocodiles do, which is absolutely refuse to learn how to chew and just smash the fuck out of everything onto, you know, just tenderizing meat by cracking it onto land and water over and over again, rather than just learn to chew their food.
Yep.
And I mean, you know, you can do that if you've got those big, massive fucking hands. You can just smash it against a rock as many times as you need to.
Yeah, just mush it down.
And you could just be very lucky like the Mando, where we see the Rancor literally minutes earlier bite somebody in half, but for whatever reason decides to bite Mando right on his perfectly protected head and not halfway down his body like the previous person, where there was an enormous gap in his armor.
I was about to say, Mando's wearing plot armor, so.
Yeah.
The best armor of all.
In other comparisons, there have been species that have been superficially similar to this species as well, which is one of the reasons I don't find the Rancor that unrealistic at all. So there's two kind of groups of animals that I'm just going to run through briefly. One is called the Chelicotheres or Calicotheres, and these were big kind of horse ape looking motherfuckers. They are perissodactyls, so odd toed species. So modern day perissodactyls are horses, tapirs, rhinos as well. And they evolved, as opposed to the hooves which we see on modern-day perissodactyls, they actually evolved these massive claws.
Hmm.
So, 3 clawed feet, much like the Rancor has.
Like a cassowary.
Like a Gasora, yeah. And a lot of them were thought to have walked around on their knuckles, actually. So knuckle walking, which I think is something that a Rancor would have probably done as well. Because I don't think that thing would be bipedal for long stretches. I think it would be walking around on its knuckles.
Yep. Yeah, we see it do it in the show, too. Yep. It even curls its fingers in, just like an ape, and right on the knuckles.
Yeah. And much like the Rancor, they had quite short but very powerful hind legs. And they had really long, large, kind of hulking arms. These body plans were perfect for high browsing, so they could kind of prop themselves up against trees and get at leaves that other species just couldn't. Like I said, they had enormous claws. Some of them walked on them, some of them knuckle walked. But they could, I mean, that, like the Rancor, they could swipe your face off in a heartbeat if they wanted to. And obviously this was sanitized Disney stuff, but I really wanted to see somebody get disemboweled by a Rancor.
No shit.
Yeah, that would have been awesome.
I really had, especially with this comparison to these larger, you know, these enormous herbivores with all this really badass weaponry, I was really hoping to be able to try to say that, you know, maybe a Rancor's like a bear. It can eat meat, but it's usually just going to be going for, you know, vegetation. Yeah. But that very defined view we get from both inside and outside the Rancor's mouth show that all it's got are five shitty little canines. So there's no plant eating going on there.
Yeah. It wouldn't be good for it at all. And that's actually one of the reasons that they think Calicotheus may have gone extinct, along with some of the other species that it shared the earth with at the time, because it had a less specialized stomach. So when artiodactyls, which are things like horse, deer, giraffe, came along, they have much more segmented and specialized stomachs, which are better for digesting vegetation. So species like the Calicotheus would have had to eat a lot more to get the same amount of nutrition as a lot of these other species that came along. So large Calicotheus were potentially thought to have gone extinct because they were too specialized, as well as the fact that other species came along which just outcompeted them. And it could also have been due to a changing climate as well. But we didn't miss them by that much. The last Calicotheus went extinct in North America 10 million years ago. But they persisted in Asia and Africa until 1 million years ago. So,
wow.
I know,
wow.
That sounds like still like a long time, but on an ecological time scale, it's quite short. Yeah.
It's a blink of an eye.
Yeah. And then the other ones, which people may have heard of before, are giant ground sloths. So the Rancor is supposed to be 5 meters tall. Calicotheus were the largest of them were a little bit over 2 meters tall at the shoulder. So that's still pretty big.
Yeah.
I'm 2 meters tall at the very top of my head, and anything that towers over me like that, I would be shit scared of. But ground sloths. So ground sloths were enormous. Megatherium is the one I'll focus on. Because sloths, actually, we only have two species left today, and they're, you know, you can only distinguish them by the number of toes on their, like, front feet. But
yep.
Sloths in the past were incredibly diverse. There were aquatic sloths, actually. Sloths that they think they didn't swim along, but they used their claws to, like, drag them along the seabed and drag them along the bottoms of lakes and rivers as well.
That's really cool.
They had burrowing sloths that could burrow into rock to make caves.
Jesus.
And they had cliff climbing sloths as well. Sloths that would scale cliffs the size of, the sizes of mountains just to get away from predators, that sort of thing. If you want to, by the way, if you want to find out more about this, there's PBS Eons on YouTube has an amazing video on all different species of sloths. But moving back to Megatherium, because that's the one I'll be focusing on, that was actually 6 meters tall, the largest specimens they found, which is taller than the Rancor.
Christ.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the Rancor is supposed to be five meters tall. Megatherium is 6 meters tall and weighed about 4 tons.
Wow.
So, like I said, actually kind of larger than the Rancor. Enormous species. Again, really good at high browsing. So leaning up on trees and eating vegetation there. And once again, enormous things. None of the large saber-toothed or scimitar-toothed cats that were around at the same time as Megatherium would have ever messed with it. Yeah, there's you guys didn't grow up on this, but I loved walking with dinosaurs and walking with beasts. The documentaries that came out when I was young. Yeah, and there's a really good scene from one in which a Megatherium just smacks the shit out of one of the big cats. And it's just dead instantly. And I always really love that scene. It's fantastic. CGI has not aged well, but yeah. And yeah, so honestly, I don't really have many complaints with the size here for once. I mean, normally we always say it's probably a little bit too big. I think it's potentially a little too agile. But it's, you know, it's only putting in these sort of efforts for a short period of time. So, I don't know. I I think it would be exhausted after what it's been through. You know, going full King Kong and scaling the highest building it could find, which...
All two stories.
Yeah, so exactly. Grogu actually didn't do anything. It was just tired at that point and took a nap.
Exactly, yeah. Just completely tuck it out. It's going to wake up in 3 hours raring to go again. Yeah. But yeah, I thought this was a really cool cool animal. I do think it would be more likely for it to be, like I said, a herbivore. Because generally, the largest species we've ever had on land have been herbivores. But yeah, the mouth is just not designed for that sort of thing. I mean, but you do have pandas, which have, you know, got some pretty pretty distinct canines. But
population density could be different on another planet when it came to prey species.
Yeah, true. Yeah. And we never know what sort of how big the prey species are on the planet either.
I was about to say, maybe they just have some really meaty plants.
Yeah.
You talked. You open your trap. You sing and you
sing. Feed me, Cobblepot. Feed me now.
Continuing over from your guys' point, just looking at these from a general physiology perspective, I found one of the cool thoughts made most evident by the fact that Boba, piece of shit that he is, decided to put the reins through the Rancor's nose. But it's, right? Its nostril rides above the eyes. The nostrils are quite a bit above that. And Adam, my understanding is this is a transition point we can often see with species that spend more time in the water. In aquatic basis, oftentimes the nose will start to move up such that they can spend a greater amount of time either hiding or persisting under the water, right?
Yeah, hiding, persisting, or it's on some kind of evolutionary, I hesitate to say pathway because that implies a direction and evolution is just whatever works best at the time. But part of the reason why the blowhole on a cetacean like a whale or a dolphin is on its back is because it helps with that streamlined and hydrodynamic shape. Because it doesn't really make sense to have to come up face first to get air and then go back down when you could just have it on your back, stay underwater and keep swimming while breathing at the same time.
Yeah, and so it having an ambush predator background and potentially spending or at least hiding in certain situations where maybe it's avoiding something else that predates on it. Furthermore, I tried to get a good look at its eyes. I'm wondering if it might have an elevated third eyelid. So species like the platypus, they actually have a third eyelid that they can put up when they're underwater that allows them to basically wear goggles so they can see a lot clearer in murky water.
I was going to ask, so I know that camels, they don't have a third eyelid, but their eyelids are see-through. So that could also be potential for that as well.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest point that I took away from looking at this creature, which I think we'll all agree on, is fuck you for bringing it to Tatooine. It is definitely not designed for that environment. It's got multiple indicators that suggest that it's from places with either a much higher prey density or a larger amount of vegetation or food that it can get access to. And it definitely requires a much higher moisture content. Like, here's my cute baby dolphin that I keep in my desert palace. Do you guys not love my baby dolphin? And it's like, you need to stop.
It's clearly in a really fucking bad state. Like, and so was its predecessor on Tatooine. Like, these things should not be carted around. It really just, you know, reminds me of one of the... I went to an awful zoo when I was overseas in a country when I was much, much younger. And I had the displeasure of seeing one of the saddest, most bedraggled looking elephants I've ever seen in my life at said zoo. And that's what it brought me back to, looking at this thing. It was horrifying. I think it's being treated really badly. That thing needs to be taken back to its home planet. And I mean, look, potentially it's been traumatized at this point by getting into a fight with some massive fucking droids and won't be able to survive in the wild, but it should at least be in some sort of sanctuary.
Well, and its initiation in terms of, they spend a lot of time talking about the imprinting that takes place at the beginning where the trainer basically tells Boba, you know, once this blindfold comes off, it will imprint on the first human it sees or first organism it sees, which is a thing. We study in nature the idea of biological imprinting. Primarily, we've studied it in birds. There have obviously been movies that stick with all of us involving...
Do we all remember the story of Chris Crow and his bird wife?
I was about to bring that up. I was trying to remember the guy's name.
Yeah.
So apparently in most of these cases with birds, the gap point of how long it takes is somewhere between 13 to 30 hours. And after that, the imprinting fails. We know that humans can take baby ducklings and form imprinted bonds. And this can actually cause really big screw-ups later in life, which was the other thing I was going to bring up for the Rancor. I don't know if you'd be able to take this and actually bring it back into the wild. Do you guys know what sexual imprinting is?
Is this that thing from the last Twilight movie?
That's what I was just going to say. Is that when Jacob imprints on a baby?
Sexual imprinting is the process by which a young animal learns the characteristics of a desired mate. So, example, male zebra finches appear to prefer mates with the appearance of the female bird that rears them rather than that of the birth parent when they're different. And so this can cause some serious fuck up. So one example is the London Zoo. The female giant panda Chi-Chi, when taken to the Moscow Zoo for mating with the giant panda Anan, she refused attempts to mate, but made sexual presentation repeatedly to zookeepers.
What are those zookeepers doing in London?
My point being that this organism taken, placed in this absolutely abnormal situation where it's probably seeing Boba as the most abusive parent ever, is not going to be in a situation where I imagine that it could be rewilded, or not rewilded, it could be returned to its previous environment. We've just fucked with too much of its upbringing, and it really does start to make him feel like an abusive parent in this situation. I worry that the treatment experienced by the Rancor will make for some terrible flashbacks in its new spinoff series, Rancor, where we'll spend the first four episodes just with flashbacks of it growing up with Boba the Fett.
Do they make back to Boba Tanks
the
that
Fett.
Fit?
I'm calling him Boba the Fett because he's a dick.
I was going to say real quick, I looked it up just because I couldn't remember, and camels actually do have the third eyelid.
Boba Fett may not have been the most badass character from the original Star Wars trilogy, but that hasn't kept him from growing into one of the most recognizable and famous characters from the franchise. But none of this keeps him from being a complete idiot.
The last point we wanted to talk about here, just from the lore, that Rancors lay eggs. They are a egg-laying reptomammal, I guess would be the category we'd put them into.
Yeah, we've talked about this before, but just briefly again, the whole of the Star Wars universe is populated by these reptomammals. So Dave and I talked about the concept of synapsids last time, and the Rancor is one of these reptomammals.
Yeah.
So lots of mammalian traits, but they do still lay eggs. Yeah.
Now, obviously, we have egg-laying mammals that are present on Earth. I mean, there's two of them that are both from...
Four.
There are four monotremes?
There's three different species of echidna.
Yeah. Ah, cool. Okay.
Yeah.
So there's really two of them.
Yeah. No. Well, there's always been two different. And like, so they branched the long-beaked echidna into a different species a while ago. But if you've ever seen a long-beaked echidna, they look very different from Australian echidnas. They're up in. Okay. You find them up in Papua New Guinea. Yeah.
Perfect.
Cool.
And, of course, the Australian would feel attached to the concept of the monotreme.
Mm-hmm. I love them.
Now,
they're beautiful.
In-
also, I want to take that back. There are four different species of echidna. I have, new echidna dropped last year.
Yeah, there's five, idiot.
New echidna dropped.
Sam, when you edit this, make sure you edit me before you saying that you're an idiot for saying there's four when there's actually five monotremes.
Yes, I will do. Don't worry. Yeah. Here we go. Hang on. There's the Western long-beaked echidna, the Eastern long-beaked echidna, and Sir David's long-beaked echidna.
The remix. Sir David's long-beaked echidna featuring the Streets.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I just wanted to spend my section, because I don't think we've talked in depth about monotremes before, and I definitely did not know enough about them reading through, but I want to just go through a couple of like fun monotreme facts. So first of all, their name literally translates to single opening in Greek, just in reference to the fact that they have a single, the cloaca, that they use for urination, defecation, and in some cases, reproductive situations. In monotremes, only semen passes through the penis. Urine is excreted through the male's cloaca, which I guess there are people out there that would argue that this is the way. Monotreme eggs, in terms of, we usually think of egg designs associated with desert environments where the egg is basically a really good way of keeping water, keeping moisture, and allowing your offspring to develop external to your body. Monotreme eggs are retained for a long period of time within the mother to receive nutrients, and generally speaking, they hatch 10 days after laying. So it's not like it's a long period of time that these eggs are lying around for. Monotremes do not have nipples, and so instead they secrete or they produce milk or lactate from mammary gland openings in their skin.
I hate that.
And one of the cool things...
Milk patches.
Yeah, just milk patches.
Just moist, constantly moist patches of fur.
Yeah.
Would Luke Skywalker drink from the yes. milk patch?
Though? Yes.
Is it blue? If Rancor milk is blue, he's drinking that shit.
You only have to start with would Luke Skywalker drink, and then you can insert whatever the hell you want after that.
Absolutely. Just get a really absorbent chamois and just plop it against the skin and then wring it out into a nice little beaker. Yeah.
So imagine, was it Flashdance where she does the dance and pulls the bucket down on top of her? Just imagine Luke Skywalker doing that with blue milk.
Would it be more of a Carrie situation?
Yes.
Yeah.
The term for newborn monotremes is puggles. Yeah, it's great.
I think that's just for echidnas. Is that for platypus as well?
Yeah. Apparently you group them all together as puggles.
There's this platypuggle.
Yeah, okay, sorry. Yeah, platypuggles.
So it's like echidnas as well, or puggles?
Yeah. Well, they're echidna puggles, but not platypuggles. Yeah. They do have relatively well-developed forelimbs, and so when they're born, because there isn't any nipple, they just frequently crawl around the area looking for milk patches. The milk that is produced actually has antibacterial elements that are stuck in it. Because there's no nipple, it's really difficult. There's a lot of contamination that takes place on the skin, which feels like a cool evolutionary mechanism for, like, we're not going to, like, clean up the area or make it any better. We're just going to secrete a whole bunch of antibacterial stuff and hope that that kind of cancels out the danger we're creating here. And then the last thing that I kind of wanted to just talk about, because they still don't have a great answer for this, monotremes tend to operate at much lower body temperatures than other typical mammals. So your average placental mammal usually operates around 37 degrees Celsius. Humans are around 37.5.
Unless they have hypothermia.
Most marsupials come in around 35 degrees Celsius. The average temperature of a platypus is 31 degrees Celsius in terms of where they let their body temperature ride, which is really cool. They're still trying to figure out.
When I got lost in the desert, I was just channeling my inner platypus. I wasn't suffering from severe hypothermia.
Yeah.
I love the idea of you in the desert, platypus there, no idea why, that walks by as your temperature has dropped down to, what were you at, 33, 34?
31.
You were at 31.
Yeah, it's severe hypothermia. But the platypus just walks by you and looks over and he's like, pussy, as he keeps walking.
Yeah. No, he says platypussy. Yeah.
Like, yeah, yeah, go on with your milk patches, you nasty bitch.
People always posting that fucking thing about platypuses producing both eggs and milk and therefore being a portable source of omelets. But who the fuck puts milk in an omelet?
Americans.
Oh, you beat your eggs with it.
No, you don't put milk in an omelet, Adam.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yeah.
Nine.
Listeners, please comment on if we should put milk yes. in our omelets.
We need to know, Sam the vegetarian and me the vegan, we have to know, does milk go in an omelet?
Yeah.
So to close this off, though, we are going to find ourselves in a situation with a falsely imprinted, damaged rancor that's living in an environment that it's not designed to sustain, dried out, probably fairly chafed, experiencing a situation without nipples anywhere on its body, but potentially going through some sexual reproductive system where it'll just start producing milk in various patches on its skin, probably scaring the shit out of Boba and scaring the shit out of the trainer that he's got, who I'm not convinced knows anything about rancors.
Danny Trejo, who was in this for fucking 5 seconds.
Yep.
What the hell? I thought he was going to come back.
If there's anybody who knows anything about rancors, it's Danny Trejo, and I would trust that man with a rancor. No.
And I want to summarize this rancor situation and the fact that they keep bringing rancors to Tatooine, because the Hutts say, like, oh yeah, we like to get rancors all the time. We bring them in.
It's our thing.
So for the longest time in North America, people would buy iguanas and they would feed iguanas lettuce and hamburger. And as a result, your average iguana was not living for longer than 4 years. And finally, biologists, veterinarians, other people got involved in this and they went, listen, motherfucker. And they started teaching them how to supplement calcium and get the proper nutrients that they needed for these heavily nutrient deprived animals. And then it switched to your average iguana living, and it can, 36 years. And we had all of these people that had purchased iguanas because they're like, it's a good starter pet. They don't live very long.
Oh, I hate the term starter pet. That disgusts me.
Yeah, it's bad.
This very much feels like what's going on with the Rancors. The Hutts just probably run through these things really quickly on Tatooine, and they're like, I don't know why they only live 2 years. They're a short-lived species.
They're just good starter pets.
It's weird, this 5-meter-tall massive monster living in a concrete pit that's 10 meters across, living off of one or two people a month, isn't doing well.
Right.
But I think your panda example really inspired me. I think that what's actually going to be happening later on in this poor Rancor's life is, after imprinting on Boba the Fett, it's just going to try to fuck Mando.
Hey, how you doing?
I just wanted to give a quick disclaimer before my section. If you have not seen the new Spider-Man, shame on you. But I will be discussing some spoilers, so you can skip my section if you do not want that spoiled. So jumping in.
Shame.
I wanted to clarify some media terms today in honor of the season of the Book of Boba Fett. So much like my hero, anti-hero, villain, anti-villain talk, I wanted to go into somewhat exact definitions surrounding the term spinoff. So now a spinoff, also sometimes called a sidequel, which I've never heard that before, but apparently that's a thing, is a new series containing characters or settings that originated in the previous series, but with a different focus, tone, or theme. So famous examples of spinoff series are Frasier from Cheers, Angel from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, The Mandalorian. But the very first spinoff, just a little history on top of this, was thought to have happened in 1941 when the supporting character Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve from the old-time radio comedy show Fibber McGee and Molly became the star of his own program, The Great Gildersleeve.
That sounds like a drag queen.
Yeah, interesting name. So also with spinoffs, you may hear the term backdoor pilot as well. It's not a sex term, so don't Google it. Which is essentially when creators engineer a character into the original series to promote and ground like a future spinoff. So that's kind of when you start to see shows like shoehorn a character in at the last minute.
Well, they did that with The Flash on Arrow, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
I mean, they did that with Boba Fett in The Mandalorian, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I'll get into that.
Oh, yeah,
Boba
sorry.
Fett is not a spinoff. So then...
He's an anti-hero.
Then you have crossovers, both official and unofficial. A crossover is a placement of two or more fictional characters, settings, or universes in the context of a single story. So a great recent example is Spider-Man No Way Home. So you have characters colliding into the same story. One of my favorite crossovers is Archie Comics versus Predator. I love seeing Jughead's spine get ripped out of his body. It's great. I would argue here that this is where the Book of Boba Fett should land as well. If they had not included Mandalorian in there, then it would have been a spinoff, but they did, so it kind of feels more like a crossover to me. I will say technically it is also a spinoff because the whole thing from Mandalorian comes from Star Wars, so that's when you kind of get into the weeds of it, because you can have spinoffs of spinoffs and then crossovers from the spinoffs, so it just all gets into a big story mess. But then the next term we have here is revival. And a revival is a work of fiction that returns to produce new episodes and material after being off of the air for a certain amount of time. So a recent example here being the show that's called And Just Like That, which is a revival of Sex and the City. So you have all the same characters, they're just flash forward 20 years later. And also Star Wars, right? The new sort of trilogy bringing up the later. You know, it's the same universe, same characters, but it's can be much later. The revival, I was going to say, the revival I wish that would happen would be Firefly.
Yeah.
As do we all.
Yes. So, and then finally we have the classic term reboot, which also goes by requel, which I've never heard either. Remake or retcon, meaning retroactive continuity. So this signifies a new start to an established fictional universe, work, or series. The reboot completely discards continuity to recreate its characters, plot lines, backstory from the beginning. It has been described as a way to rebrand or restart an entertainment universe that has already been well established. So again, turning to Marvel for these examples, before No Way Home, Spider-Man was rebooted thrice. The Hulk has also undergone several reboots, and I'm sure you guys can think of a ton more reboots because Hollywood really loves to do them.
Every single DC movie.
This is the third Batman in a decade? Dark Knight Rises came out in 2011, wasn't it? No, it was 12, 11. Because I'd got back to Australia from Germany. It was late 2012, The Dark Knight Rises came out. So yeah, this is going to be, yeah, within a decade, yeah, three different Batman. Yeah. Four if you count Will Arnett as well, which I like to because he's very good as Batman.
I'll count him.
But yeah, those are kind of all the major terms that you'll hear. And they can kind of, like I said before, they can kind of blend into one another because they can have, you know, reboots off of spinoffs, off of crossovers, and it can get kind of messy. But there you have it.
So the pinnacle of all weird crossover mixing spin-off things is a TV show from the 90s called Saint Elsewhere. Have you guys heard of this thing?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. No. So this is really cool, right? Yeah, so I think it was the characters from Cheers that appeared in Saint Elsewhere at some point as themselves, making them part of the same TV universe. And from Cheers, what was the...
Frasier.
I came out of Cheers as well. And there's been several other shows that have crossed over into them and back and forth. And I think it's something like half of American TV at one point in the mid-2000s was all connected to this one show, Saint Elsewhere. And the funny thing here is that at the end of that show, it is revealed that the entire show happened in the imagination of a small boy. Which means that half of all TV in America in the early noughties was happening in the head of this small boy. I think his name was Tommy.
Yep.
Yeah. And that included Red Dwarf, Doctor Who, worse shows such as Crossing Jordan and Las Vegas. All those shows were happening inside the head of Tommy. I think Tommy Westfall is his name.
Wow.
I can't remember exactly what. But yeah, I think that is just a really, really weird piece of trivia. That is the ultimate result of us loving crossovers way too much.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, you've got, it's a similar thing with Richard Belzer's character, Detective John Munch, best known from Law and Order. I first knew him from Law and Order SVU, but he was also on regular Law and Order, The X-Files, The Beat, Law and Order Tri-Blood Jury, Arrested Development, The Wire, 30 Rock, Sesame Street, and Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
They're one of my favorite, I don't even know what to call it, but it's like kind of a crossover, but kind of not. I think it's The Simpsons, but it's The Simpsons and Futurama have both acknowledged the other show as a fictional show in that universe. Yes.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the Rick and Morty Simpsons crossover. I thought that was fantastic. It's just a short little, like, 5 minute. I think it was an introduction.
It's an opening. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really good. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Morty, what did you do? You killed Simpsons, God. Morty!
No, I didn't mean to!
Go.
This is another time where this question has a really obvious answer. Do we feel bad for the Rancor?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Feel inadvertently bad for Danny Trejo, which I didn't touch on this, because he clearly states, like, I saved this one from, like, the fight pits because I wanted to take care of it and I wanted it to be mine and I wanted it to imprint on me. And then Bubba's like, cool. Now take the blindfold off.
Yeah. And also,
he would have had a much better home with Danny Trejo.
Yeah. And they don't show Boba Fett interacting with the Rancor in any way, shape, or form throughout the series until the main fight. So
Well, he gives them a bone.
Yeah, he passes him a bone through the metal grates.
Yeah.
Which is, again, the kid living in the basement that you throw scraps to.
Poor thing.
Would we recommend this series?
No.
I think most of us are going to say no, but Adam, I'm interested to see what Adam says, because you love anything that gives you more Star Wars, right? So...
I tend to love anything that gives me more of a universe that I enjoy. Mm. I do enjoy the world of Star Wars. My biggest problem with it is that they cannot get away from the same four characters, the same city, the same single planet. Yeah,
that's fair.
Mm-hmm. And Book of Boba Fett, despite bringing in some other characters from other aspects of the Star Wars universe, Cad Bane especially, I really like him as a character, there's just not enough to really recommend this beyond a true blue completionist. Like, unless you really just want to say you've seen it all and you really know that all the lore and all the inside out, you can miss it. Watch a 4-minute video on YouTube of the Rancor, all the Rancor scenes from Episode 7. That'll cover you.
Honestly, the more I watch the Star Wars World series, the more I feel like the video games represent it best. Really? Obviously the original, but like...
Agreed, 100%.
Yeah, I feel like all the video games, you get to explore different planets, you have different characters, like they really try to get away from the fucking royal Skywalkers and Tatooine. Mm. And I think it's a really cool way to explore the universe that it seems like the movies and shows can't seem to get away from, like Adam was saying.
Yeah. That's why I do quite like The Mandalorian still, because it does go to different parts of the galaxy. I mean, again, all they always end up on fucking Tatooine, but it has explored some really cool places and some really interesting facets of the Star Wars universe. But this was...
Now imagine that, going to different planets, doing the cool underbelly seedy shit, but you do it as a Force user and you get to be part of the... enormous event that shaped the history of the galaxy hundreds of years before the original trilogy.
Okay. Yeah.
Where is she?
Obey me, or she dies, apprentice.
Never.
All right, next week, off the back of one of our fan suggestions from Monica, we'll be watching and breaking down the science of Encanto.
Thank you for the suggestion.
Which is something I am very excited about because I have somehow still avoided seeing it. Not on purpose, it just hasn't happened for me yet, but I'm very excited.
Answering the most important question, should Encanto's sequel be called Dos Canto or Encanto?
Or Escándalo.
Is this a drag queen reference? Okay, yeah.
More drag race nonsense. Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's too late, Sam. We've gone down the rabbit hole and it's fabulous. The monsters aren't real, but the science is.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And why do you deserve to be the daimyo? What prevents us all from killing you and taking what we want?
Easy, boy. Easy.